Okay, Birshus everyone here. Birshus my parents, my grandfather, everyone who's in attendance. I wanted to start tonight. This disclaimer should have been obvious. We didn't start yet, don't worry. There's Makoros on the Bima and on the back tables to pick up. Great. There's Makoros on the back tables in the back. So I think it's obvious, this disclaimer, every shir until now, but I wanted specifically to point it out right now. Before this year, about Meiser Ksafim, which we're going to talk about tonight. If you looked at the sign of the speakers outside at any given point over the summer, so you'll notice that one of these things is not like the other. For all the male speakers, I'm the only one who doesn't have a rabbi or even an R with a shmichik in front of my name, whatever that's supposed to mean. So the first disclaimer is obvious. I mean, in this case, okay, I won't say the first disclaimer. The disclaimer that matters for us is that that's a very important fact. I'm not a rabbi. I'm not a posek. I don't even touch the feet of what a posek is, and not every rabbi that you meet does either. But that's particularly important tonight because we're talking about real halacha lemaisa applications of a really important din, a really important maybe mitzvah. We'll talk about what exactly it is of maaser ksafim, of giving this important form of tzedakah that Am Yisrael has been knowing to give for so long. And we have to be very careful to know, you know, when someone's talking, what to take with a grain of salt and what not. So we're calling this an overview of the laws of maaser ksafim. It becomes particularly important, the disclaimer, because there are a lot of mitzvos hatfluyos ba'aretz, a lot of mitzvos that are applicable only in Eretz Yisrael. So the Shulchan Aruch didn't spend a lot of different chapters on it. He didn't write it all over the place. He basically compiled all of the different mitzvos that are relevant in Eretz Yisrael into one long simen in Yoredeia, in simen Shin Lamed Aleph. And in this simen he discusses Trumas, Maisers, Hafrashas Chala might be in there, I'm not sure. People who are learning Hafrashas Chala might know. He discusses the Maisros, all different things. The Ramah, there in that Simen Shin Lamed Aleph, in Sif, get this, Kuf Mem Vav, 146. So you get a picture of how big the Simen is. So the Ramah has a Taina, an argument against the Shulchan Aruch, that the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber of Yosef Cairo, actually left out all of the important dinim about Maiser Ani, about the tithe that we take, the tenth that we take, of our produce, of our Gidulei Karka, of the things that grow from our ground, and give to the poor people. The Mechaber pretty much left out those details, those halachos. There are makoros laying around in the back in places. So the Ramat doesn't like this. He's upset at the Mechaber. He says, why'd you leave it out? If you would have written these halachos in, we could have learned a lot about it, even though Maiser Ani doesn't really apply today. But we have this idea of tzedakah and Maiser Ksafim, which is separating a tenth of your money, at least, to give to poor people, which we obviously do still do today. And says the Ramat, it would have been a lot of help. It would have been very helpful, very productive for the Shulchan Aruch to quote all these dinim. And we could have learned from Maiser Ani, from this idea of the tithe that goes to the poor people, to the idea of Maiser Ksafim. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach used to say that it's for this reason that it's very hard to render a very clear psak in any halach in the sugyas of Maiser Ksafim. There's no gemaras. We'll see in a second. There's no gemaras to talk about the different details. Even the poskim, you're going to rely mostly on the modern day poskim, mostly on the poskim, especially of your dor, because they understand the metzias of all the things going on in our lives. They understand salaries. They understand the reality of life in your society. And it would have been helpful to have a Shulchan Aruch, but we really have to rely mostly on the poskim, the modern, more modern poskim, and also on our own svara. So we're not going to rely on my svara. All I could do tonight is sort of be malakit, collect from the different sources that I was able to learn, and hopefully learn them together with everyone here. I can't really teach anything or give any psak over, but everyone should realize what the overview is, and then take that, digest it, and sort of ask the shilas to the correct people that it makes sense to ask to. But nothing tonight should really be taken as anything important other than discussing certain sugyas in the sources. That's the disclaimer. Okay, so what is the source? So we know that there is this idea of Maiser Ksafim. We're starting with that assumption, but where in the world does it come from? Where does it start? What's the source? Is it a mitzvah d'oraisa? Is it a mitzvah d'rabbanan? Is it something else? What would that be? So if you start in source number one, there is one makor that's actually a source, mitzvah d'oraisa, or there's a din d'oraisa, to give Maiser Ksafim, to give tzedakah, a tenth of your money, to the aniyim, to poor people. It doesn't show up in Shas proper, but remember we discussed that Gemara in Tainus and Daf Tes about Aser Bishvil Shetisasher, take a tenth to give tzedakah so that you'll get richer. We discussed that in the first year. So Tosfos on that Daf and Tainus point out that there is a Sifri. Now, this is also a disclaimer, we don't really have this Sifri. Some people thought maybe Tosfos didn't mean the Sifri, he meant Svarim, he saw it somewhere, but needless to say, Tosfos is a reliable person, or reliable people to rely on. Okay, that was redundant. But they claim they found in a Sifri the following: Aser to Aser, es kol tuas zarecha hayotze hasadeh shana shana. Right, you should take a tenth of all of your produce every year. Ainli ela tuas zarecha Shechayiv Meiser, I only know that your gidulei karka, the produce from your ground, that needs to be taken Meiser from. How do I know ribis, things that you gain interest on, uprakmatia, different business dealings that you do, v'kol shar revachim, any earnings, any income that you make, how do I know that those all also need to be tithed, need to be taken Meiser ksafin, minayin, tamad lomar, es kol. Not only from these few things, like the produce from your ground, but es kol atvuas zaracha, everything that you have in your life, everything that you gain, that you earn over the course of your life, you need to separate a tenth and give to charity. So Tosfos say, this is in fact a source for the din of Maaser Ksafim, the din of giving a tenth of your money to poor people in need. It sounds from Tosfos like this might be a din daraisa, right? Anytime we have a pasuk and we darshan the pasuk, so there may be room to argue about how big of a daraisa it is, depending on this type of drasha. But if there's a drasha, it's usually a type of daraisa. So from Tosfos, there's room to argue that he thinks it's actually a mitzvah daraisa, din daraisa, to give ma'aser ksafim. The Chassam Sofer in his Chuvos in Yerodeis and Reish Lamed Beis, he points out that he thinks the Maharil thinks this way as well. He thinks that the Maharil, one of the Rishonim, also thought that that this was a din daraisa. This is not the accepted opinion la halacha. We don't usually assume that Maaser Ksafim is a din daraisa. What do we assume? We'll have to keep forging forward. So the next source, to the left here in source number one, is basically that it's just a chiyuv gamar. It's an important chiyuv. It's a total obligation, but it's midarabanan. That's what the Taz here in Simon Shin Lamed Aleph Yerodeis Sifkat and Lamed Beis claims at the very beginning of a much longer comment that he has over there. He claims that it's only a din derabanan, a din gamor nonetheless, but again, a din derabanan. If it's a din derabanan, so why is there a pasuk, right? Why is there a pasuk if it's only mi derabanan? So that the obvious answer is that there's such a thing called esmachta. We've talked about this last year a few times, and esmachta is something that even though the din is only mi derabanan, it's only a mitzvah that Chazal made up, a takana gezerah, but they based it in a pasuk. They found the clue to it, or they found a more divine clue in it. That's a machlokas. We've shown him how to understand exactly. But basically, the pasuk is not to be taken literally as a drasha, but it's a hint towards the din derabanan of Maaser Ksafim. The Nodi Bihuda, in Madura Kama of his Chuvos Yerodeis Siman Ayin Gimel, he also claims this way, that it's only a mitzvah derabanan, but a chiyuv gamar. The third option, and this is really the way we seem to hold, is that it is neither. It is neither a mitzvah daraisa, nor is it a full-out mitzvah derabanan. It's, what's the only other option? It's a minhag. Yeah, it's a minhag ba'alma. Minhag Yisrael, a very important minhag, a minhag Yisrael that's been going on for a long, long time, as we'll see in a minute. Maybe it traces back really early in our history. But it's a minhag that Am Yisrael take on upon themselves. The other poskim also quote this as well. This is the Bach, here in source number one, in the bottom of the source number one. Many achonim say this. There's a sefer, Tshuva Me'ava, which was written by Rav Aaron Fleckler is... Okay, shout out to Rabbi Fletcher. But Rav Aaron Fleklish, he wrote these Tshuva Me'ava, which sounds like a Musar Sefer for a nice Shana Bet Boy in Elul, but in fact, it's an intense Sefer of Shalos Tshuvos, Tshuva Me'ava. He was probably one of the foremost Talmidim of the Nodi Behuda. He replaced the Nodi Behuda at some point. He was an important person. So he also writes this way, that it's only a minhag ba'alma, only a minhag Yisrael to give Meiser. And he quotes that it's a pella, it's a total wonder that none of the Achronim quoted before him, that there's a Rishon who says this explicitly. He points out the Maharami Rutenberg, who is the Rebbe of the Rush. The Maharami Rutenberg says explicitly that Meiser Ksafim is only a din, not derabanan, but only a din in a minhag. It's a nice custom that Am Yisrael took on, an important one, but just a minhag nonetheless. So that's what some of the Achronim point out. It's interesting to point out that just because it's a minhag doesn't mean it's taken too lightly. The Chassam Sofer is fond of pointing out in multiple places in his Chuvos, probably also in other places, but I've only seen it in his Chuvos, I guess. The Chassam Sofer likes to point out that a minhag is binding mitam neder, meaning if a person keeps a minhag, if he keeps a custom, whether it's his father's custom that he keeps or it's Am Yisrael's custom, so why does he have to keep doing it? What binds him to keep doing it? So the Chassam Sofer likes to say that it's a neder. If a person keeps a minhag, he has to keep doing it because it's basically taking a vow. If you keep a minhag consistently, it's basically taking a vow, and you have to keep up with that vow as per the laws of the Torah, that you can't violate your neder. And in fact, the Chassam Sofer claims, and this is a big chiddush that we don't really agree with, the Chassam Sofer claims that if a person violated his minhag, if he didn't keep to a custom that he had committed to, he would be in violation of an iser daraisa of baal ta'acher, which means that you cannot violate your vow. He thinks it would go that far that it would actually be an iser daraisa to not do a minhag. So although it's true that we don't necessarily assume like that Chassam Sofer, it is important to note that this is something to consider. When we talk about a minhag, we're not talking about just quote-unquote a minhag. We're talking about a chashev, important minhag, that has a lot of, it's very significant in our lives, and we shouldn't throw it by the wayside. The Pisrei Tshuva, in that simen, Shin Lamed Aleph, in his Sifkat Yud Beis, he points out the more poskim who say this way, that's only a minhag. And Rav Chaim Kanievsky Shlita in his book called Derech Emunah, which is on the Rambam, so he has a piece, he has a whole chelik on Hilchos Matnos Aniyim. So there he discusses this as well, and he says, this is the Hachras HaPoskim, this is the way we hold, that Maiser Ksafim is a minhag, not a din darabanan, not a din daraisa. Rav Chaim then goes on to point out that there's an important nafkamina that the poskim before him already pointed out, but there's an important nafkamina to this. Let's start with the background. If a person takes on a chumrah, if a person takes on a minhag tov, does something nice, so oftentimes he can get stuck that it becomes a neder. Well, for example, what? A person decides to go to Daf Yomi. Nobody realizes this is a scary thought. A person decides to go to Daf Yomi. So it's sort of clear in the Gemara Nedarim Daf Ches, it's clearer in the poskim. If a person decides to do that, so if he does it three times, we've probably all heard of this a little bit before, if he decides to do that chumrah, that minhag tov, that nice thing that he's deciding to do, that dvar mitzvah, if he does it three times consistently, so that, say the poskim, can become a neder. And in fact, if he wants to stop, let's say go on a Daf Yomi shir, so he'd have to be matir neder. He'd have to go to one talmid chacham or three people and be matir neder and make sure that his vow is annulled before he can stop doing it. Let's say a person takes on, this is a random example, probably not shaykh to anyone, but let's say a person takes on to not talk during davening. He takes it on as a minhag that he's going to keep this one. I don't know. He signed something. I don't know. Whatever. He says he's going to do it. So the post can say, that's a neder. That becomes a neder. And if you took that on with the intent to keep it forever, or you did it three times, okay, that for sure, no one here probably done, but, or you did it three times, so if that's true, not you guys, so if that's true, then it would be a neder, and in fact, you need hataras nedarim, you need to annul that vow in order to go on and take it away. This is clear in the postgame, the Mishnah Berurah, in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, in the Beis Yosef, it's in Shulchan Aruch Yerodei, in Reish Yudal, it's all over the place, it's very important. So, Rav Shechter Shlita likes to point out that this is important halachah l'maisa in the halachos of Netilas Yadayim. Okay, why? The Beis Yosef, well, here we have a Shulchan Aruch, and source number two, the Shulchan Aruch, in Or HaChaim, Sim Kuf Samech Aleph, talks about some of the dinim of Netilas Yadayim, and here he says that we try to wash, where do we wash up to when we do Netilas Yadayim? Everyone knows, we wash up to our wrist, right? We're supposed to wash up to our wrist. Now, is that Haskamas HaPoskim? Does everyone agree to that? So Machlokas Rishonim. Some of the Rishonim say you only have to go up to your knuckles, some of the Rishonim say you have to go up to your wrist. We're Machmir, we take upon ourselves as Am Yisrael, that we wash until our wrists. But says the Beis Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch and the Beis Yosef were the same person, so says the Beis Yosef in Siman Kuf Samech Aleph, it's just a chumrah, right? The Beis Yosef is on the left side over here in source number two. It's just a chumrah ba'alma. Am Yisrael took on this nice minhag tov to wash up to their wrists, but it's not the ikar adin, it's not the basic requirement. And therefore, says the Beis Yosef, at the outset, when you first wash Netilas Yadayim, I know everyone's going to have a kasha, but maybe we'll deal with it, maybe we won't. When you first start washing Netilas Yadayim, says the Beis Yosef, say out loud, or at least, the very least, have in mind, Beli Neder. I don't want to keep necessarily washing my hands up to my wrist. I'm taking it on not as a Neder, Beli Neder, right? No Neder involved, no vow involved. I'm taking it on just as a Chumrah, just as something I want to do for now. But if I ran out of water, or if it's Yom Kippur, and I can't wash until my wrist, I only wash until my knuckles, so I'm not in a neder, I'm not in a vow, I'm annulling it in advance by saying Beli Neder. So that's what the Beis Yosef and some of the postgame point out. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky says, so too here by Maiser Ksafim. Once we say that Maiser Ksafim is just a minhag, right? But a minhag, just a minhag, ends up being binding mitam neder, it ends up being a neder if you keep doing a minhag for the right reasons, you keep doing it three times, or you have in mind to do it forever on the first time, it becomes a vow, it becomes a neder. Says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, the first time, the very first time you give Maiser Ksafim, you should say Beli Neder. You should say, I don't necessarily plan on always keeping this neder, I don't necessarily plan on always keeping up with this minhag tov, and so Beli Neder I take on Maiser Ksafim. The Imre Yosher, which is Rav Meir Arik, who also wrote the Chidushei Tal Torah in the back of the Gemaras, so he has a tshuva. The tshuvas are called Imre Yosher. It's in Chelek Beis, it's Simen Kuf Lamed Vav. This is what Rav Shechter likes to point out. He says the exact same thing. He says a person, when he takes on Maiser Ksafim, he should make sure to say that it's Beli Neder, Beli Shum Neder. He should make sure that it's just a minhag tov and nothing more than that. So this is what we see so far from the fact that it's a minhag. Now, the fact that it's a minhag and not a din darabanan and not a din daraisa, that Maiser Ksafim is just a minhag, obviously will lead us to more kulas, right? Even though we mentioned that there's some significance to the fact that it's a minhag, but ultimately it's more kal, it's more lenient than a din daraisa. Ultimately it's more kal than a chiyuv gamar midarabanan. So what are those kulas? So before we get to those kulas, we need just a little bit more background. Here we're going to move into the second section here on the sheets. As some background, we mentioned in the beginning there's a din of Maiser Ani. That din of Maiser Ani is a din daraisa. That's a mitzvah tuliyah ba'aretz. You have to take from your produce and give a tenth to the aniyim. The question the poskim, the achronim, really deal with is how much is our idea of Maiser Ksafim, right? How much is that idea sort of an outgrowth or an extension of, or an expansion even, of Maaser Ani. Meaning we don't do Maaser Ani nowadays. In Eretz Yisrael it was Daraisa, maybe nowadays, maybe it was Derabanan and Chuzlart, nowadays we probably don't do it, but there's different reasons to be Achona for that. But we don't do Maaser Ani. Okay, we're not going to be able to do that. But we do have this idea of Maaser Ksafim. Now, is Maaser Ksafim sort of a replacement on some level of Maaser Ani? Is an extension and outgrowth of Maaser Ani? Or is it a new din? It's a unique, independent, totally distinct mitzvah, din, minhag of tzedakah. There's Maaser Ani on one side, and there's this tzedakah minhag on the other side. Which one is it? There will be major nafkaminis to this as well, which we'll get to. But first, let's figure out what we think it is. So, in fact, if you look in, I didn't number this source because it's going to be obvious, in the circles. See it? So in the circles, we have a couple of psukim, because we want to start by asking, who is the first person to introduce, to be misaking, to make, to establish the din, the minhag, of Maaser Ksafim? Who is the first person to do it? So this seems to be a three-way machlokes, rishonim, a three-way appearance in the Torah, in the psukim, and Baruch Hashem, it works out. If you look at this sheet and you weren't paying attention to what the shir is about, it looks like the spheros, looks like a Kabbalah shir, works out to be the three avos. So we'll see in a second. So the first source we need to know about is in Parshas Vayetzeh, in the rightmost circle. In Parshas Vayetzeh, we learn Yaakov Avinu is on the run. He wants to go home, and he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I make a vow, I make a neder to you, that if you protect me, if you get me home safely, then everything I have, right? B'chol asher titein li, aser asranu lach. Everything that you have given to me, all of the properties that I own, aser asranu lach, I will separate a tenth from it and give it to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, or give it out, really, because that's going to be important. In source number 3, on the rightmost side, the Das Zakenu Mibalei Tosa, which was the Balei Tosa's commentary on Chumash, they quote a medrash that Yaakov Tikein Loseis Maiser Min Hamamon. Yaakov Avinu, our forefather Jacob, he was the first person to be Mesakein, to establish that we should give Maiser Ksafim, that we should give a tenth of our money to other people. That's the first source. So that's Yaakov Avinu. So that's pretty early. But in fact, it might get even earlier. If you look in the second column over here in the middle, so the Rambam in Hilchus Malachim, in I wrote Parak Aleph, but it's Parak Tes, Halacha Aleph, the very beginning. We actually mentioned this Rambam last week when we were talking about the mitzvahs of the Bnei Noach. So it's in this area in Parak Tes, again, that's a typo, where the Rambam talks about the Sheva mitzvahs Bnei Noach. And the Rambam starts by listing all the seven mitzvahs Bnei Noach. He lists them all off for you, and then he goes on to explain the advancements of mitzvahs throughout Jewish history, the advancements and the enhancement of Kedushas Yisrael and all of the mitzvahs that were bestowed upon them. So he points out that after all the seven mitzvahs of Noach, Avram Avinu was given Bris Milah, and he made up Shachris. And Yitzchak Avinu, so what did he do? See in the bold, Yitzchak Hifrish Maiser. Yitzchak took out Maiser. He took out a tenth of his stuff. Stuff. So we'll see what that means in a second. If you look in the source directly above, Yitzchak Avinu, Vayizor Yitzchak Ba'aretahi, we actually mentioned this, 2 weeks ago also, this Pasuk, that Yitzchak planted a bunch of trees, a bunch of plants, in a place that ended up being called Me'ah Sha'arim, because he did a special mitzvah, which the Medrash says was tzedakah. Vayizra, we said the Lashon of Zriya, planting, is really referring to tzedakah. That's what the Medrash says over there. And because Yitzchak did tzedakah, so therefore he was blessed with this Me'ah Sha'arim, with this great growth, with the great wealth and riches. So the Rambam says, this is the first person to establish the mitzvah of Maaser. When Yitzchak Avinu took out that tzedakah, by Yisrael Yitzchak, when he took out that tzedakah from his produce, he gave Maaser Ksafim. He was the one he gave Maaser, we'll say it for now. He gave Maaser. So now we have Yaakov Avinu, and the Rambam says, no, it was in fact Yitzchak Avinu, but it gets one step further. If you look one more source to the left, the Ravid, who wrote a commentary on the Rambam, it's not much of a commentary, it's more of an attack. So the Ravid here has an attack. He has a hasaga. He has a fight against the Rambam. He says, Omer Avram, Kenaya Roy Lomar. Here's what you should have said, Rambam. V'hu hispalal shachris, talking about Avram Avinu. V'hifrish Maaser, says the Ravid, Yitzchak was not the first person to give Maaser. Not only wasn't Yaakov, Yitzchak wasn't even the first person to give Maaser. In fact, the first person was Avram Avinu, our first forefather, our first founder of the Jewish people. And if you look in the source above in Parshas Lech Lecha, basically Avram Avinu won that crazy war against the majority of the kings, and he ended up taking all the spoils of war. And then it says he met Malki Tzedek, who was a Kohen Lekel Elyon, and it says, Vayitein lo, Maaser mikol. He gave a tenth of everything, all of the spoils of war, he gave a tenth of it to Malki Tzedek, to this Kohen. So says the Ravid, this is the first time we see Maaser in the Torah. Wow, so three-way machlokas, exactly where is the first level, where is the first time we see Maaser in the Torah? Now we'll rule out the first source, we'll rule out Yaakov Avinu, and we'll just wonder, basically, what's this machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid? They're having a machlokas about history, machlokas about chronology. What is this? Is a Jewish history class? What is this? What are they arguing about? who came first? Who cares? And what exactly is the point of the machlokas? So first of all, the Radvaz, which is a commentary on the Rambam, points out, what's the reason the Rambam didn't want to say that Avram Avinu was the first person to be Masakin Meiser? Why didn't he want to say that Avram Avinu was the first person to take a tenth of his stuff? So the Radvaz points out that really what the Raivan and the Rambam are looking for is the first person to give Meiser Ani. Not Meiser Ksafim, Meiser Ani. The tithe of their produce to the Aniyim, to the poor people. Fine. Says the Radvaz, the din by Meiser Ani, the din is that you only have to give from Gidulei Karka. It's in the bold here in source number 4. You only have to give from your produce that grows from your ground. So basically, the Radvaz says, the Rambam didn't want to say that Avram Avinu was the first person to give, because Avram Avinu, if you look in the Pasuk, gave from everything. He gave from the gold, the jewelry, the iPods, everything that he got in the war, all the spoils of war, he gave Meiser from. So it clearly was not Meiser Ani proper. It clearly was not his produce. And so says the Radvaz, the Rambam didn't want to say that Avram Avinu was the first person to give Meiser Ani. So what does the Ravid think? What's the Ravid argue? So Marina Rav Shechter Shlita, again, and he has this in one of his Sfarim, he points out that maybe the Machlokas is exactly what we're talking about. Is Meiser Ksafim part and parcel Meiser Ani, just sort of the next step? It's an extension, it's an outgrowth of Meiser Ani, or no? Meiser Ksafim, what we know of today, is just a new, independent, totally new, distinct, unique din of Tzedakah, not related to Meiser Ani whatsoever. Says the Rambam, Meiser Ani, which I'm looking for, so Meiser Ani has nothing to do with Meiser Ksafim. Meiser Ksafim is a new minhag. It's a new din made up about Hilchos Tzedaka. And because of that, if I'm looking for a din of Meiser Ani, I need to look for someone who gave from their produce. I can't look for someone who gave from their money. Giving from your money has nothing to do with Meiser Ani. It's a totally different din. It's a totally different minhag of Tzedaka that has nothing to do with the din daraisa of Meiser Ani. But the Ravid says no. All the dinim are the same. The idea of Meiser Ksafim, the idea of giving a tenth of your money, comes directly from the din of Meiser Ani. That same din daraisa we had floating around, that doesn't apply anymore, extends not only from your produce, but all the way to your money, to your wallet. You have to take a tenth out of your wallet, because it's an extension of the din of Meiser Ani. And says the Ravid, if that's true, then the first source, I don't need to look any further than Avram Avinu. Yeah, he gave from his Ksafim, he gave from his iPods, he gave from his gold, he gave from his money. That's true. But that's not a problem, because that's exactly what Meiser Ksafim is coming out of Meiser Ani. So that's what the Rav Shechter explains is the Machlokas Rishonim going on over here, the Ravid and the Rambam. So now we know. We know two things, basically. You can turn the page now. We know two things about Meiser, basically, Meiser Ksafim. We know that there is this din daraisa of Meiser Ani, and there's a bit of a question whether Meiser Ksafim is an outgrowth of that din of Meiser Ani, and it takes on the dinim of Meiser Ani, or no, it's a new minog, a new entirely different din, a new entirely different mitzvah of tzedakah. Meiser Ksafim and Meiser Ani are actually separate. That's what we're working on. And we saw that some machlokas Rambam and Ravid. And before that, we saw that there's a major machlokas in the Achronim whether Meiser Ksafim that we know of today is a mitzvah daraisa, a mitzvah darabanan, or in fact a minhag ba'alma. So the Achronim point out that really these two questions are linked up. If you say that Meiser Ksafim is a full chiyuv, darabanan, daraisa, whatever you want to say, a full chiyuv, a din gomer, then you're obviously going to think that it's Tali and Meiser Ani. The same concept of Meiser Ani extends, it grows out, it carries over into the realm of your wallet, into the realm of your money. And Meiser Ksafim is in fact an extension, another Chiyuv Gomer, under the rubric of Meiser Ani. But if you think that it's a Minug, Meiser Ksafim is just a Minug. It's a Minug Yisrael, an important one, but just a Minug to give Meiser Ksafim from your wallet, from your money, from your savings, from your income. If that's true, then you're not going to say that it's an outgrowth of Meiser Ani. You're going to say it's a new din. It's a magical new minhag, independent, unique, distinct from Meiser Ani. Totally different, carrying over none of the dinim from Meiser Ani. That's what the Achronim point out, that really these two questions are totally intertwined, totally linked up. So we paskin what? We said before, it's a minhag, right? If we paskin it's a minhag, that means we think it's a new din. It doesn't necessarily have to relate exactly and parallel exactly the dinim of Meiser Ani. So that will give us a couple of important nafminas, the first one being in source number 5 and 6 and 7. The Rama in Simon Reish Mem Tes in Yerodea points out, V'ein la'asos Meiser mi Meiser shelo dvar mitzvah. A person shouldn't take his Meiser ksafim, his tenth of his money, and give it to a dvar mitzvah. What the Rama means is definitely up for debate. We'll interpret it as not only everyone agrees you can't take your Meiser money and buy an esrog. Okay, you can't buy your own mitzvahs with it. You can't buy your tefillin. You can't do things like that. Says the Rama, you can't even buy neros lebeis haknesses or shar dvar mitzvah. You can't fund mitzvah causes with your meiser. Now that would be a little scary. So that's what the Rama says. You can't use your tenth of your money to fund mitzvah causes. We'll see in a minute exactly what the extent of that is. Now, just to point out, if you can't give to mitzvah causes, what can you give to? Right, poor people. So that's what the Ramah points out himself. Rak yitnenu la'aniyim. The Chavetz Chaim points out that he wrote a lot of Svarim on the Chavetz Chaim. Everyone knows him for two things, the Chavetz Chaim, and he's also the author of the Mishneh Berurah. He also wrote a whole bunch of other Svarim, a lot. If you buy Kol Kisvei Chavetz Chaim, it's about $70, it has all of them in it. Don't own it yet, hint hint, just kidding, seriously. So he had a sefer called Ahavas Chesed, which is all about all the dinim ben adam l'chaveru, gnilas chasadim, tztaka, halva, all different things. So in his chapters about Meiser Ksafim, he points out there's a Medrash Tanchuma here in source number 6 on Parshas Re'eh, which says, Aser to Aser, you should take out a tenth, you should separate Meiser, Remez l'mefarsha yamim, if you look in the bold, l'hafish echad min asara, to who? La'amele Torah, to people who learn Torah, to people who toil in the tents of Torah. Says the Medrash, the Iker Chiyav, the most important and most fundamental way to give Meiser Ksafim, the basic way to give Meiser Ksafim, is to Talmidei Chachamim, people who sit and learn and are working towards the goal of becoming Talmidei Chachamim. Now, just another disclosure, not everyone who sits and learns is a Talmid Chacham. Exhibit A. But there are people who are Yechidei Sgula, who sit and learn and are important to be supported. We need to take care of them. And so Meiser Ksafim, says the Medrash, should primarily go to these people. The Chavetz Chaim points out that really, that's true. Really, primarily, it should go to Talmidei Chachamim. But if someone has a karov, a relative, who is poor, so that person comes first. So if a person has a son, a father, a brother, whatever it may be, that is poor and needs the money, that comes first for your Meiser. But then the next step is to give primarily to Talmidei Chachamim. I guess your best bet is to find poor Talmidei Chachamim, and I guarantee you won't have trouble finding them. That's the Ramah, and again, where we're supposed to give our Meiser stuff in the Shach, here in source number 7, disagrees. The Shach disagrees with the Ramah. He says it's not true that you can't give your money to your Meiser Ksafim, sorry, to a Dvar Mitzvah, to Mitzvah causes. He quotes from the Drisha and the Maharshal. Yep, he quotes from the Maharshal and the Drisha that you can give to Mitzvah causes. And the Shach explains that if a person would not have been able to do this Mitzvah without having used his Meiser Ksafim, if he otherwise would have been inhibited from performing this Mitzvah, so then he is allowed to use his Meiser Ksafim in order to enable himself to do the mitzvah. Again, everyone agrees that you can't buy an esrog or tefillin or a sukkah with your Meiser Ksafim, but can you go ahead and fund a wedding or, think of other fun mitzvahs you could do. Shach quotes some of them. Buy svarim and lend them out. Whatever it might be, says the Shach, absolutely okay, you are allowed to do that, as long as you wouldn't have been able to do it without your Meiser Ksafim.
Hi. I thought that just came to me. That Meiser, for instance, you use part of that money pay dues to your shul.
Oh, okay. So, we might touch on that. We might not, because it's being recorded, but we might touch on that. We will touch on things that will...
Certainly not going to poor people.
Right. Okay, so we're definitely getting there. So, just to sort of round this up, so this is a machlokas Shach and the Ramah. So Rav Shechter points this out, but all the Achronim basically point this out. This machlokas is seemingly exactly our machlokas, because the din by Meiser Ani is that you have to give the produce, the tenth of the produce, to poor people. If Meiser Ksafim is exactly paralleled, a straight outgrowth, an extension of Meiser Ani, so it would follow like the Ramah. You can't use your Meiser Ksafim for anything other than poor people. You can't use it towards the Dvar Mitzvah. But if we would assume, like we seem to, that Meiser Ksafim is really just a minhag, it's really just a minhag Yisrael that we keep, so then it doesn't really have to parallel Meiser Ani, and in fact you would be allowed to give to certain mitzvah causes, and that would be up to the discretion of your posik. The poskim do point out, I did correspond with Rav Shechter this week, and I saw Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted as saying this as well, that since it's a minhag, like we mentioned before, you can make a tanai, a condition at the outset. So when you start giving Meiser Ksafim, you could say, I'm giving Meiser Ksafim al tanai on condition that I can use it towards mitzvos. And if you do that, then you can use some of your Meiser money towards buying certain mitzvos, and again, you'll have to ask a posik about the details of that, not for me to fill in all the blanks there, but that's definitely a Pesach that is opened by the fact that it's a minhag and by the fact that it's not parallel directly off of Meiser Ani. That's the first basic rule. There is another basic rule, which is that a person can't use Meiser Ksafim to be poreach chov. He can't use Meiser Ksafim to pay off an obligation. If he already has some prior commitment, some money that he's supposed to give, that he has to give, that he's obligated to give, he can't use his Meiser Ksafim towards that end. So what's a great example of that? Okay, good. So if you already pledged and you didn't have in mind to give Meiser Ksafim, then it's an excellent example. Great. Anything more obvious that comes up in April? Not my birthday? Tuition we'll get to. Taxes. So a person pays taxes. So the government, okay, election season, whatever. But sometimes the government does good things with your money, right? That's true. We can agree to that. So, what?
If
Right, right, so they can definitely use it. Okay, fine, that's a good point. We'll think about that later. But the government feels free to use your money to pay for all sorts of things. They build roads, they build bridges, they fight wars, whatever they do. It goes towards good causes. So can you now say, oh, I have my Sersafim, it's about, I don't know, $1 million, and I have to pay it, so I might as well use it on my taxes, which are about $1 million. Perfect. Says the Taz in Sifkat Nalef, which is not on the sheet, but I'm pointing there anyways, says the Taz, no, absolutely not, because you can't be Porea Chov. You can't pay an obligation, a prior commitment. You can't put the money towards that ends when you're paying your Maaser Ksavim. Your Maaser Ksavim has to go towards something that you weren't chayiv in, that you didn't pledge, commit to originally. You can't use it to pay your taxes. The Taz goes even further and he says that would apply also to, next title, source number 8, supporting one's children. Says the Taz, it's true that the Gemara says in Ksubis that supporting one's children is a big mitzvah. It's true. It says it there in the Gemara. But that doesn't mean that you can use your Maaser Ksavim towards it. One is obligated to support his children. That's part of your paternal or maternal obligations, depending on which side of the room you're sitting on, and if you have children. But it's not something that you can use Maaser Ksavim for. That's not allowed, says the Taz. Now, the Shach disagrees a little bit. He says this is not a blanket rule. He says, he points out that there's a point in life where your child, you're no longer obligated to support him. Now, there is a point in life where that happens. Maybe I shouldn't say that for my parents, but that exists. That exists. So what exactly is that time? So if you look in source number 8, the Shach comments on the Shulchan Aruch later in Siman Reish and Aleph and says, Dahainu, what's the age? Yeserim al Sheish. Once a child reaches 6 years old, a parent is no longer obligated to support him. Wow. I was once talking to a certain, I obviously can't say his name for, I guess, good reason, a certain Rosh Yeshiva. And he pointed out to me that he was in the pizza store. I was with him in the pizza store. And his child was complaining for more pizza. And he said, you should know, you're older than 6. I didn't have to buy you the first slice. Okay, he did buy the second slice. But the point is that is the din that Shach points out. There is an age where your banim are considered gedolim, where your kids are old enough that you don't have to support them anymore. That's what the Shach says. Rav Moshe Feinstein, I think I have it source number 9 here. Yeah, source number 9, in the Igros Moshe, it's in Yorodea, Chelik Aleph, Simen, Kuf, Mem, Gimel. Rav Moshe says that's not really true. Really, a person is obligated to provide for his children, calls him on that it's basically normal. So a person lives in a community where it's normal to support his child until they're 18, and then they're off on their own to college and they have to take care of themselves. So then a person is obligated fully from he says it's from the din of providing money for your wife, because really she's the one who cares about the kids anyways. So Rav Moshe says it that way, but you could have said it different ways. Rav Moshe says that obligation is fully your obligation. It's not voluntary at all. A person must support his children until it's basically normal to cut them off. So in a community it might be 18, in some communities it might be until they're married. Rav Moshe defines it as until they're able to support themselves. In every community, it would have to be worked out separately. If it's normal in a community, some communities in Eretz Yisrael, it's normal to support them up until the wedding and then buy them an apartment. Meaning you'd have to figure out exactly what the norm is, but Rav Moshe says that a person must support his children until the age that is normal in that community, and therefore a person cannot count supporting his children as Maaser Ksavim, he can't count that as his money towards tzedakah until they reach past whatever age that is, whether it's 18, 22, marriage, whatever it may be.
Well, Jumba, in New York, you're required to support your children at maybe 18, maybe it's 21, maybe it's even longer than that. I'm assuming that we're bound by Dina the Mahfuz and Dina to have to support our children pursuant to the laws of the state of New York.
I don't think it goes past 18.
I know it could be 18, but it could be 21.
If it were 21, okay, yeah, you'd have to work out. Okay, you'd have to work out each scenario. Dina de Malchusa is a real din. Is a real din. We've just said before that if a person wants to pay taxes with his Maaser Ksavim, he's not allowed. But that is an assumption that you have to pay your taxes because it's Dina de Malchusa. Dina. We are assuming you have to follow the laws of the state, but every state might be different.
We have another question. Are you saying that the Maaser that we have to give it from the gross or from the net?
We're going to get there. I mean, if we have time. So there is a famous question that comes up here in the next section called, and it was referred to before, right? Yeshiva tuition. Okay, a person wants to pay yeshiva tuition for his child, so is he allowed to separate from his Maaser Ksavim and use that towards the ends of paying yeshiva tuition? Very obviously relevant shiloh, which I don't want to paskin on either. Rav Moshe has an important tshuva about this. He points out, it's in source number 10, Yorodea Beis Kuf Yud Gimel. Rav Moshe points out that maybe it used to be that you can make a chiluk. A male child, a son, you're obligated to teach him Torah to the utmost degree. That's part of the man's job in life. So him, you always have to send to yeshiva. So there's no way you can call that a Maaser Kesafim. It's not voluntary in any way. You can never count that towards Maaser Kesafim. It's a chov. It's an obligation that you always need to pay. So that's not up for a question. But what about his daughter? So a daughter, you have to. There's definitely some Torah you have to teach her. There's definitely, she has to be educated. But she doesn't have to sit until she's 18 learning Gemara. She doesn't have to do that. That's not. That's her prerogative, maybe. But it's not entirely his chov. So would you separate the two things? So Rav Moshe has a famous tshuva where he says, nowadays they're both a chiyuv gamar. You have to send your child to yeshiva. You have to your son to yeshiva. You have to send your daughter to yeshiva. No difference whatsoever. Why? We live in a world, in America, where Dina de Malchusa Dina dictates that you have to send your children to school. So if you choose not to send to yeshiva, where are they going to go? Public schools, the schools of the Medina, which are, says Rav Moshe, we live in a wonderful state, but they don't have much Yiras Shemayim, they don't teach much Torah value, they don't keep the person on the derech, and so there's a big risk of a child going off of the derech if you send to the wrong schools. And so says Rav Moshe, sending kids to yeshiva is an absolute chov, an absolute obligation, and therefore a person would not be allowed to separate Maaser from his yeshiva tuition payment. Now, this is highly debated in terms of the details, because a person knows when he pays $20,000 to yeshiva, so some percentage of it is going to support the next kid. Right? Not all of it is really covering the expenses of teaching. Some percentage of it is paying for lunch programs. Some is for programs. So a person would have to sit down with an accountant and with a principal, I guess. If you want to, you can pay me to set up meetings with the principal. So you have to sit down with someone who really knows the deal and find out which expenses are which, and then maybe you could figure out what you could kind of cut out. Rav Schechter told me also this week, he told me that Rav Breuer from the Breuer's community in Washington Heights used to paskin that 20% of your yeshiva tuition is really able to be counted towards Maaser. Again, you'd have to really figure out the details in every scenario differently. Just a little chizuk, I think we mentioned this story last year in one of the Divrei Torah at the end, but the Minsker Gadol, Yehuda Perlman, he had four names, but I'm quoting one of them, Yehuda Perlman. So he was the Minsker Gadol, that's what he was known as, okay, because he was a Gadol from Minsk, get it? Good. Okay, so he used to say that if it weren't that Chazal had already decided what all the brachos were, if Chazal hadn't already decided you make these brachas, not those, he would have made up a new bracha. You know what bracha he would have made? He said, every time I put up a mezuzah, not every time, we're learning Hilchos Mezuzah in the morning, but a lot of times when you put up a mezuzah, you make a bracha, likvo a mezuzah, right, to put up a mezuzah. And a mezuzah, I'm putting up one little piece of parchment with a little bit of Torah on the wall in my house. And I say a bracha, a berchus ha-mitzvah, and it's very exciting. Says the Minsker Gadol, every time I would write a check towards my son's yeshiva, every time I would write a check towards my child's yeshiva tuition, I would say a bracha b'chol lev nefesh, he says. I would say a bracha gedola, an excited, a simchadik bracha, that I get to pay yeshiva tuition. Because if I say a bracha when I put a small cloth on the wall, all the more so when I put the entire Torah on the luach libam, the hearts, the walls of the hearts of my children. Says the Minsker Gadol, I can't make that bracha, but the simcha, the excitement we should feel, I can't relate yet to the feelings of yeshiva tuition. But just a perspective that we have to realize we're doing such an amazing tova to our children, to all of Jewish history, if we keep paying these chovos, if we keep sending our children and paying those checks. There are a lot of details to discuss within Maaser Kesafim. What earnings do you separate from? What's considered income? So the post can point out Yerusha, even if you inherit money you have to give Maaser from, even though someone gave Maaser on it previously. If you find the Metziah, you find the lost object, you have to give Maaser on it. Okay, presents, Matanos, a person has to give Maaser on. There is a debate. If someone gives you $100 and says, go buy yourself a fancy pot at Bed Bath & Beyond, so are you allowed to take, okay, thanks, take Maaser from that and use $90 on a pot? So the Chazon Ish said yes. It's hard to understand. He says because the person who gave the gift is not really makbid if you take off $10. But the Rav Feivel Kohn, a contemporary of my grandfather's, who's here tonight, the Rav Feivel Kohn pointed out that sometimes a person will give a much bigger gift, like a $100,000 gift towards buying an apartment. So it's kind of hard to say the guy's not makbid on you taking off, what's 10% of $100,000? $1,000? How much? Just help me out. I didn't take the Mad B regions. Come on. Whatever it might be, so that would be entirely inappropriate, and this Chazon Ish is a little bit difficult for me to understand. There's also a discussion about Maaser from presents that aren't monetary. So a person, I got an urn for my wedding, I got a lot of salt shakers. I hope no one here got me a salt shaker. I love your salt shaker. But we got a few of them. So if I got a salt shaker and it's appraised at $150, so do I have to take out $15, connect that money that was spent on the salt shaker and give that to Tzedakah for Maaser Kesafim? Rav Feivel Kohn quotes a Rabbeinu Yonah, it sounds like that. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted as saying you have to. Rabbi Schechter, our Rabbi Schechter, told me that his father did not tell him to do this at their wedding. Different people talk about the Chazon Ish. Was also Mekel, Rav Yerachmiel Fried, who is a Rosh Kollel in Dallas. He just put out a very nice sefer called Ma'adani Shlomo, He quotes there that Rav Moshe Halberstam told him in a private conversation that the minhag ha'olam is not to take meiser from physical presents that aren't monetary. Fine. So that's what the post can talk about in terms of that. But obviously, what do you have to take meiser k'sapim from? Income. Earnings that you make as a salary. So, tangent, first of all, what if you don't make a salary per se, but your parents provide you an allowance? You have a student in medical school who can't pay the bills on his own. He's going to be in school for the next 4 years. 5 years residency, all these things. Or a person who's learning in Kollel. He's married, he's not married, he's being supported by his parents. Does he take Meiser from what they give him every month? So Rav Schechter always likes to quote the old Mashgiach in... he's not alive now. He's not old now. He was the Mashgiach. In Wayu, Rav Yaakov Moshe Lessin, Zichet Tzadok Lebracha, he is like the grandfather, great-grandfather of our Rabbi Wolf. So he used to come over to the Bachrim after the Avreichim, after they got married, and say two pieces of advice after their wedding. The guys in the Kollel in YU, he used to say two things. One, make sure you take your wife on a walk once in a while. Rav Schechter likes to point out, these guys were going to the movies with their wives. They didn't need that chizuk, okay? He said the second piece of advice, don't you dare take out Meiser Kesafim from money that you're being supported with. Because a person's parents or in-laws, as Rav Moshe talks about in this tshuva, which might, may or not be on the sheet, Rav Moshe points out also that if a person is being supported by his parents or in-laws, so they want the money to go towards his dira, to go towards his apartment, to go towards his living, to go towards his children, whatever it might be, for you to take money from that and give it to poor people, what's the tzedakah there? So now your parents have to pay you more, now your in-laws have to pay you more. Doesn't really make any sense. But if you're making a real salary, so it's obvious that you do have to take out Meiser Kesafim, the question is what you can deduct before you give Meiser Kesafim. So income taxes... Right, that's in source number 11. Rav Moshe writes famously that income taxes are deductible. So if a person makes $100, and he wants to take out, he has to pay 10% income tax. This makes it really easy. He wants to take 10% in income taxes, so he only gives $9 to tzedakah. He doesn't count it as $100 and then income taxes. He counts out the income taxes and then pays meiser from the rest, because the money that you make before you give the taxes is so fleeting. It might even come into your bank account for a day, a month, or even a little bit more, but it's going to be gone. If you make $100, it's really only $90 because you know 10 are going to the government. And so you don't have to count it as if you made $100. You count it as if you made 90, and you take off a tenth from that. That's how you calculate Meiser Kesafim. It gets super complicated. There's something called IRAs, I'm told. I thought that was only Shraga, but no one gets that, yeah? Okay, good. Stocks. All these things are super complicated. All the posts can deal with this, and people need to ask the right people, but realize that these are issues that need to be dealt with. What about business expenses? Are those deductible? A person needs to take a trip. A person needs to pay for transportation to work. He makes $100,000 a year, and he needs to pay $5,000 towards a new suit. A couple new suits, $5,000 towards cab rides to work, $5,000 towards hotel expenses when he goes away, whatever it might be. So all those things seemingly are deductible. The poskim say you can take out business expenses. You should take out business expenses before you give your Meiser Kesafim. What is a business expense? Very murky water we're going in. If a person goes on a business trip, and so he pays for the flight. So the company should pay for the flight. He wouldn't have gone to Florida if he didn't have to, right? Obviously. He wouldn't have gone to the baseball game if he didn't have to. But let's say when he's in Florida, he eats 3 meals a day or 3.5 meals a day. So did he need to eat all those meals? Is every one of them a business expense? Now, we're not debating what the IRS would say. The IRS might say yes, might say no. But the halacha might say yes or might say no independent of that. And so a person has to know, sort of have to know who to ask each of these questions to, and ask these questions that if you're really trying to calculate your business expenses and deduct them and deduct your taxes and chule v'chule, if you're trying to do all these things, so you have to know with a chachma, with the right person, what things are deductible and what things are not. It would be exhaustive and boring to talk about all of these details in the shiur tonight. I was hoping to give more of an overview of the exciting parts of Meiser Kesafim, and from the most of you who are awake, maybe like a Meiser if you aren't, so it seems like we did that, but these things all need to be discussed with a really, you know, an important posek. The major klal that the Chavetz Chaim ends with, I have it written down here, is that a person needs to be very orderly and organized with his Meiser Kesafim, which I feel we probably aren't always so orderly and organized. What he recommends is the following process. A person should keep a specific ledger, a specific counting book that he has for his Meiser Kesafim. And basically, he should set a date during the year, one date during the whole year. If it's easier every month, usually it's easier to do every year, he says. He should set a date where he closes the books and says, this is how much I made over this period. This is how much was deducted from taxes. This is how much I took off from business expenses. This is how much v'chule v'chule. And he should calculate exactly what his earnings are minus his losses. Then he should find out. Additionally, he should also have a ledger, maybe a smaller one, in which he tracks the money that he gives to tzedakah all year round. If he goes to davening in the morning and he gives $1, or he gives $2 to a guy who comes to his door, or he sends $50 to Chai Lifeline, whatever it might be. So he should write down, I gave $50, I gave $1, I gave $2, and you have already $53 in your account. And as you go through the year, you should be calculating how much money you've given to tzedakah. When you get to that time of year where you're doing your calculations for Maaser Ksavim, so a person says, see, how much have I given, and how does that match up to how much Maaser Ksavim I actually owe from my salary? Whatever the difference is that he still owes to Maaser Ksavim, he should give as soon as possible. If he doesn't, not the worst thing in the world, there's things you can do, but you should give it as soon as possible, and you shouldn't leave it laying around. Let's say you have the opposite problem. Let's say you overspent. You were supposed to give $100 to Maaser Ksavim, and you gave $105. So how does that work? So the poskim debate this. The Nodi Yehuda thinks you can't roll over to next year, unlike some of your cell phone companies, so you can't roll it over to next year. But some of the poskim say you can. Not clear. A person should obviously be careful about this, and like we suggested earlier, since it's a minhag, mitam neder, a person at the outset can say, I am giving Maaser Ksavim al tanai on the condition that I can roll over whatever I give extra this year to next year, and that'll work, magic, hocus pocus. Now, assuming none of us took on al tanai, right, beli neder, the first time we give Maaser Ksavim, so then maybe, if to talk to a posting about this as well, maybe they should be matir neder, they should take away their neder for giving Maaser Ksavim, then redo it with a beli neder and al tanai, with whatever tanayim we discussed, whatever conditions we discussed that a posik allows you to take, and in that way you could sort of apply everything we've spoken about. If not, not, and you're sort of stuck. But that's in terms of the basic overview of the halachos of Maaser Ksavim. We saw that it's a minhag Yisrael, a very important, relevant minhag Yisrael that everyone keeps, that is not to be thrown by the wayside, but it's not a din d'oraisa and not a din d'rabbanan. We saw it's not really an outgrowth of Maaser Ani, probably. It's probably more of a new minhag, a new, distinct, individual, independent din in mitzvah of tzedakah. We saw Avram Avinu might have started it, Yitzchak Avinu might have started it, Yaakov Avinu might have started it, but that trifecta is pretty serious, and therefore it's something to take very seriously. We saw the things that you can take Maaser for. You can give to mitzvos, maybe according to the Shach, some of the mitzvos, as long as you wouldn't have been able to spend that money otherwise. You can support your children after a certain age. It depends on the community that you live in, and that needs to be consulted with a posek. You can pay certain other mitzvos with it. Yeshiva tuition is more questionable. Again, the details of that need to be discussed. Deducting taxes. We do deduct income taxes, not sales taxes. That doesn't make any sense, although people do discuss it, but doesn't make any sense. Deducting taxes, deducting business expenses, all of these things are topics that need to be discussed further with the posek, neither the time nor the place. So everyone should have a wonderful night, and we'll see each other here back next week. I don't know what we'll be discussing yet. Shkaya.
I have a question. Do any of the poskim discuss deducting?